Thanks, Eileen. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Thank you very much, Dermot. Good afternoon on this Tuesday afternoon. 51551 Ray at RTE.ie. Have a listen to this. If you have a dog, is it reacting to that music? Because it should. That, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, is dog calming music from YouTube. There's 15 hours of it. Why, you ask? Yes, that's a fair enough question. But we've had a problem over the last couple of years with our golden retriever, Stanley. He's been waking up in the middle of the night, consistently. And the nights that he didn't wake up would be the ones you go, oh, great, that was great. But the majority of nights, there'd be a bark, 4 o'clock, 5:30, 6 o'clock. Out to the garden he goes and back in. Now, in fairness to Jenny, my wife, she got up most nights. Most, when I say most, 99.9% of the time Jenny got up to take care of the dog. But it came to a breaking point the other night when I think he woke up three times. And broken sleep, as you know, isn't good. And all the professionals now are telling us that sleep is so important for our health, our physical health and our mental health. So Jenny decided she would do something about it. And she rang a lovely lady called Susie, who trains dogs. She had a chat with her. She doesn't do night calls. You won't come around to your house and sort out your dog during the night. But she very kindly gave advice over the phone. And one of the things she said was, get yourself some dog calming music and one of those Bluetooth speakers and set it up before you go to bed. Press play and off you go. So last night, we got an old iPad, went onto YouTube, put in dog calming music, got the radio that's connected to the Bluetooth thingamajig, put it down beside the dog and pressed play. I said, what do you think? Jenny said, I don't hold out much hope, but we have to try everything. Lo and behold, he didn't wake up. He was successful. He slept through the whole thing. And when I came down this morning, the music had even stopped. I don't know what stage during the night. There was 15 hours of it. So if you have a dog that wakes up in the middle of the night, there you go. Dog calming music on YouTube. Thank you very much, Susie. And thank you to whoever composed the dog calming music. It's relaxing, isn't it? Not just for dogs. Not just for dogs. I was delighted when I opened the papers this morning and saw a picture of Keith Duffy and his daughter Mia with big beaming smiles on them. And Mia had the mortarboard on and the gown because she has graduated from Dublin City University with honours in enterprise computing. It happened on Monday and Keith put up a post saying, "We are the proudest parents in the world. To all who have followed our story for over 20 years, today marks the biggest milestone ever. Mia graduating from DCU with honours, a day we were made to believe would never happen." You see, Mia, as you know, is autistic. We are blessed for all your support and that Mia was given every opportunity to reach her full potential only by never taking no for an answer from anyone along the way. Mia herself has always pushed herself and worked hard to achieve her own goals and continues to do so. Please take the positive from this and see, believe and achieve. Yes, you can. Yes, we can. Keith Duffy. And Keith, I'm just so delighted for you and Lisa and Mia. And Keith, over the years, he sat in front of me so many times making the case for services for children with autism or autistic children. And he fought so hard to get Mia what he knew she deserved. And he fronted charities, he fronted runs and balls and runs and all sorts of things, all to raise awareness and funds for the families of people with children who are autistic. So that's a lovely story and great to see you this morning. When I opened up the paper, there she is, and Keith, and pumping the air with his big smile and his hair. Big smile and his hair. We were talking about dogs there. Cats, they've done studies on cats and what they understand. Yeah, I know. Monsieur de Mouzon from Paris Nanterre University studied 16 cats' reactions to different people talking. Here's the thing. They don't answer to their name unless it's said by their owner. And there's a sort of a baby talk, seemingly, that cat owners have with their cats. So when the owner says their name in the baby talk way, they respond. However, you or me, non-cat owners, could be saying the name over and over again and the cat won't respond. Just so you know. Just so you know. They're the most popular pet in Great Britain. I wonder what's the story here. Do cats outnumber dogs? If anybody has that information, please, 51551 or ray@rte.ie. Remember a great book by an Irish journalist. I'll get his name. Anyway, it was about the future and transhumanism and how we are going to incorporate various bits of technology into our bodies. Well, it's happening already. It's happening already. There's a story today. As this isn't the first story. I think I read him back in April as well. There's a guy called Arnie Zoak. He's from the UK. He's an NHS healthcare assistant. He travelled to Cologne in Germany to get a subcutaneous payment chip put into his hand. Right? It's about the size of a pin. And it's in the palm of his hand. Now, when you or I go into the newsagents to buy papers, does anybody do that anymore? I do. In the morning, I use the phone. People use their cards. People use cash. Not for Arnie. When Arnie goes in, this Arnie Zoak, he just swipes his hand over the machine and the payment chip that has been surgically implanted into the palm of his hand, that does the beepy thing, and he pays for the papers. The first thing he did when he arrived back from Cologne with his new subcutaneous payment chip was to go to the vending machine in his workplace and buy himself a Snickers. There you go. And seemingly he was seen waving at the machine because he was trying to find out where the thing was, you know, so he was waving at the machine and nothing was happening. His work colleagues must have been looking at him and goes, oh, there's Arnie. He's lost it completely. So he was waving at the machine. Eventually it went to beep to beep and the Snickers was selected and dropped into the drawer and he got it out. And that's the future. That is the future. And if they can do that, we'll be watching stuff in our brains without even goggles on. That's crazy, mad, worrying stuff. In the future, ladies and gentlemen, the Eurovision will happen in Liverpool next year. And the closing date for entries, if you want to represent Ireland in Liverpool at the 2023 Eurovision Song Contest, is this Friday, the 28th of October. And Michael Keely, the executive producer in charge of Eurovision and head of the Irish delegation, has come out today and offered advice to would-be contestants, participants, whatever you want to be called, songwriters, singers, etc. So he has the top five tips of how how to qualify for the Eurovision. He still has to write the top five tips for winning the Eurovision. That's coming later on. But he's written the top five tips of how you get selected to represent Ireland. So have a look at last year's Eurovision Top 10 and ask yourself, is your song really a contender in the biggest, most competitive music show in the world? Number two, singers, performers must be outstanding. Being good isn't enough anymore, says Michael. One bum note on stage and it could be game over. Number three, your song should be a finished piece of work recorded professionally and not more than 3 minutes long. If your song is 5 or 6 minutes long, can't possibly be shortened, then Eurovision isn't the place for you. Number four, don't try and write a Eurovision song. There isn't a typical Eurovision song. And I just put in any more there because there was a time when there was a typical Eurovision song, but there isn't anymore. And he says audiences spot songs which lack artistic integrity and are inauthentic. And finally, it's worth remembering that songs in native languages have done particularly well in recent years. So good luck with that. We need a win. Well, we just need to qualify for the final, really. That'd do me. So we could get two nights out of it. The Tuesday and the Saturday, or maybe the Thursday and the Saturday, whichever semi-final we're in. Anyway, the closing date, this Friday, if you have an old song, 3 minutes long, in your back pocket that you haven't released, send it into rte.ie/Eurovision and you could be representing us in Liverpool next year. Of course, the other thing that's happening this weekend is Halloween, and there's talk of pumpkin here, there and everywhere. We had Micheál Byrne in a couple of weeks ago. And he has the record for growing Ireland's biggest pumpkin. And he talks about all the various pumpkins and the groods and the various colours. I was reading this morning that there's a pumpkin regatta that happened over the weekend in Casterlee in Belgium. So they get these huge pumpkins, take the lid off, gouge it out, all the seeds and all the meat. Is that what they call it? The stuff in the middle. And then they climb into it and with a paddle and they have a race. That's brilliant. Racer Oscar Guell, a Spaniard living in Brussels, called the experience dirty, sticky and oily before gleefully adding that he'd definitely be back next year. Well, how would you like climbing into a big pumpkin with a paddle and getting into the water? That it sounds like crack and it looks like crack. And while we're on pumpkins, there's advice from a lady called, what's her name? Barbara Costello. She's an American and she does, you know, she does all those tips about cooking and all that sort of things. Anyway, she has the do's and don'ts. It's a bit like Michael Keely's advice on the Eurovision. But the do's and don'ts of clearing out your pumpkin to cut the face on and all that sort of thing. So Barbara, give us your do's and don'ts, please. Quick.
Hi everybody, it's Babs. Did your mom ever tell you the do's and don'ts of pumpkin carving?
Don't stand and carve your pumpkin. Sit. Just put them on your lap. Now time to cut the bottom of your pumpkin, not the top. Don't do this. Use your hand mixer instead. Get all those strings cleaned out. Your mixer did the hard work of loosening all those strings.
There you go. That was new on me. I don't have a hand mixer, but if you have an old-fashioned hand mixer with the whiskers on it, you stick it into the pumpkin and all the thing wraps around the things and you take it out and that's easy and you don't get all messy. And then all you have to do is take out the last little bit. So there you go. Thanks very much for that, Babs. And good luck with the pumpkin carving. Jeff Kinney. You may not know his name, but you know his work. He's the man who brought us the Diary of a Wimpy Kid. I think it's for the last 15 years, 17 books. He has sold over 275 million copies of his, I think there's 17 books now, Diary of a Wimpy Kid. Anyway, we're talking to him today and there will be a fan of Diary of a Wimpy Kid in your life. It could be a son, a daughter, a niece, a nephew, a grandson or a granddaughter, whatever. Anyway, pay attention right now because he's coming into us. Well, not coming into us. We're talking to him on the phone after 4 o'clock. He's coming to Ireland in November. This time it's very exciting because it's a rock and roll live show. It's called the Diaper Overload Show. And the rock band, which people will be familiar with, Loaded Diaper, will feature in this thing. It's happening in the RDS on November the 14th after school. So there'll be music. Jeff will be emceeing it. There'll be questions. There'll be dad dancing, all sorts of things. Anyway, here's what you have to do. If you are a fan or you know a fan, get on to them now. Get them to send us a voice note. I'll give you the number in a moment. A question or a comment for Jeff Kinney, Diary of a Wimpy Kid writer, author. Get it into us now. And if we use it, you will get a copy of his new book, which is Diaper Overload, and tickets to go along and see the live show in November. So here is the number. Write it down. 087 114 7899. 087 114 7899. And a voice note on that. It's just a question or a comment. Say your name. Hello, I'm Ray. Hi, Jeff. How does it feel to have sold 275 million books worldwide in 22 languages? That'd be my question. Sure, I can ask him that when it comes on. Anyway, get them into us now. 087 114 7899. Now, let's see what you're saying on the texts. Our dog does the same thing practically every night. The only problem with the calming music is that our dog is deaf, says Marion and Kerry. I wonder why he's barking. Because Susie suggested that maybe... And oh yeah, here you go. You might have a fox around the garden. My little terrier, Chico, wakes me with barking at least twice a night. It's because of a fox. And part of the calming music is that it drowns out the sound of the fox. That's what Susie says. 2 years ago, our lovely dog Tilly was attacked. When we got her home from the vet, she was in distress. So we put on some dog calming music and it calmed her down. Don't know what we would have done without it. It even calmed us down, says Sheila. And try some songs by Leonard Cohen. We have a cavalier. And every time Leonard Cohen is played, he flops down and closes his eyes, says Gene. Cats are increasingly popular because of our shift in lifestyle over recent years. More people are working from home and living in apartments. Cats are less work than dogs. That's a good observation. And memo to all cat owners, your cat owns you, not the other way around. Aha. Uh-huh. Interesting, we're talking to Dawn O'Porter and her new book, her new novel is called Catwoman. And I know Dawn O'Porter has had many cats over the years, so that'll be a conversation that will be continued with her. And we have 5 cats, all feral. They're now the most affectionate pets and the best company. But the downside is the shedding of hair. Yes, golden retrievers do that as well, twice a year. All over the place. And if you're wearing black and then you go out and you think you're looking all smart and then somebody looks down at your ankles and it's covered in beige, fawn, whatever colour hair. Not good. Not a good look. Not a good look. Okay, we'll tell you about our quiz in a moment. But first, Taylor Swift. Yeah, Taylor Swift. I like that. Taylor Swift from her new album, Midnight. You're on your own, kid. You always have been. Well, thank you very much. Now, we're looking for two of you to come on after 4 o'clock and play our little quiz, Reeling in the Ears. Yeah, two people and three questions each. Questions on bits of songs, news reports, TV shows and movies. And there is a prize. You can win a luxurious trip to Carton House, which is a Fairmont hotel. Enjoy a cosy escape for two to this stunning Georgian estate. Carton House is the first Fairmont-managed property, and it's set in 1,000 acres of sweeping parkland, ancient woodlands, lakes, and the meandering River Rye, making it the most picturesque backdrop for an autumn stay just 25 minutes from Dublin. So much to discover at Carton House, and we're giving one lucky listener a chance to stay in the garden wing with breakfast in the house on both mornings and dinner in the atmospheric Kathleen's kitchen on one of the evenings. Sounds great. I'll get you the email address for Carton House in a moment, but first, the question. What messaging service experienced an outage this morning? What messaging service experienced an outage this morning? Was it WhatsApp or Carrier Pigeon? WhatsApp or Carrier Pigeon? 0818 715 925. 0818 715 925. And it's cartonhouse.com. cartonhouse.com. Good luck at that.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Or you can send us a text about anything that's on your mind, dogs, cats or whatever, 51551. Now this Friday night, Imelda May will be doing her thing on the Pooka Big Top stage in Trim Castle as part of the Pooka Festival, which is running for the second year. And Imelda joins us now on the phone. Hello, Imelda.
Hello, Ray. How are you doing?
Oh, you sound great there. Yeah.
So good.
You don't know what you get these days with technology, but you're coming in loudly and clearly. So great to hear your voice.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
So this Friday night, Pooka Big Top Stage, Trim Castle, that's going to be spooky.
Yes. It's going to be gorgeous.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah. And what? Tell us about this festival.
It's the second year and... it's mad that nobody's done it before, really, if you think about it. It's a no-brainer, a Halloween festival in Ireland. And I spend all of my time travelling around the world trying to explain to people that Halloween is not an American festival. It's an Irish festival. So it makes sense to have it, you know?
Yeah.
And everybody going to have it. So it's going to be a celebration of Samhain, our ancient Celtic pagan ancestral celebration. And when the veil between our world and the other world is thinned,
hey,
just for a small period of time, and we have a chance to leave behind old ways and have a rebirth. So that's what we're doing, and we're going to have loads of fun. It's going. I'm on, and I've just this second asked a wonderful Dublin band, a Liberties band called Hawk, to open up for me. So they've just said a big yes.
Great.
So they're going to be on before me. And yeah, there's Lisa Hannigan is on, and Jerry Fish, and the circus.
I'm just looking here. There's comedy as well. Jason Bourne's there. David O'Doherty, Joanne McNally. Like it's a big festival. It's a big festival.
Yes. There's going to be spectacles. I'm bringing a gang with me. Whether I was playing that or not, I'd be certainly going to it anyway. So.
And you're going to stay on for the weekend, Imelda?
I'll stay on for as much as I can.
Very diplomatic answer.
As much as I can. No, I'll stay on for a couple of days.
Yeah,
I wish I could do the whole thing.
You're very busy. So acting is taking a bigger and bigger role in your life, excuse the pun. So I was looking at the trailer for Fisherman's Friend. So that was a sequel, was it, to...
Kind of, yeah. I mean, you don't have to watch the first one
to get the second one,
you know.
Yeah.
And it was just a gorgeous movie, and I got to go to Cornwall and stay there for 6 weeks and be immersed in the lovely community and make friends and pretend to be somebody else for a while. And I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Aubrey Flynn. Yeah.
It was a wonderful experience, and I'm starting preparations for another movie in January.
Right.
So
you have the bug.
A few other little things.
You have the bug.
I have the bug. Ray, I'm a storyteller. I'm into stories, really. Yeah. You know, whether it be songwriting or poetry or acting, it's I'm an El Shanachie. It's just about telling stories, isn't it? And connecting in that way.
I suppose there's a huge difference. And we've talked about the experience of performing in front of a live audience, which was taken away during the lockdown. But and how much you get from that. So it's different when you're on set in Cornwall or whatever, and there's 15 people behind the camera and the director calls action and it's you and James Purefoy there and you have to do a scene. It's completely different, isn't it? You call on a completely different skill set.
It's totally. Yeah, it's very, very different. But it wasn't too difficult to pretend. I was falling in love with James Purefoy. I mean, that's not the it's not the most difficult day's work I've ever done.
Wasn't taxing.
He was very charming and very sweet and very helpful as well. But here's a name drop for you. Years ago, I was on a tour bus sitting talking with David Bowie, and he was talking to me all about embracing change. And I do, that stayed with me, you know, that you have to, I always believe it's good to be a little bit uncomfortable with what you're doing, to push yourself out of your comfort zone a bit means you're kind of on the right path, for artistically anyway, I think.
And it's so important as well for your mental health because it just keeps the old brain ticking over, doesn't it?
Keeps excitement.
Yeah,
if you look at kids are always doing things that they're always learning new things and trying new things and adventurous and fires me up anyway.
And the other thing that they're talking about a lot now is the importance of play, even as adults. And acting, I suppose, is the ultimate playing, isn't it?
Totally.
Yeah.
And there's no wasted time is never time wasted, you know?
Go on. Yes, right. Okay. So
wasting time is never, if you think about it, when you know those things that you do when you're wasting time, they're your memories mostly.
Mm.
If you think of all the memories you have, it's not all the things that you did on your list that you needed to do. It was the chatting or the messing or, you know, rolling around messing with your kids or, you know, it was always the laughing that is always is the time you're wasting. So
running down the embankment of a railway. That's what we used
to do. It's always the things, it's the messing that you remember.
Yeah,
and speaking of which, actually, I'm going to the opening of Pat Inglesby's documentaries coming out.
Right, yeah.
The peculiar sensation of being Pat Inglesby. And he's just such a phenomenal poet. And I'm a huge fan of his for many years. And he's very much, if you read his stuff and his short stories, very much into playing and messing. And there's a child in him that I love. And when I write me poetry, he's definitely been an influence on me with me. My audiobook is out this week of me poetry.
Yes.
God, I didn't mean to do that. That was a good link.
I just leave you off there. Have you got your notes? I'll go to the loo. I'll be back in a sec.
I was talking about Pat. He's such a treasure.
Are you doing the poems yourself?
In me audiobook?
Yeah.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, of course, sure. Yeah, yeah, sure, yeah, yeah. No, but some people give their audiobooks over to other people, but I can't imagine you doing that.
Oh, God, no. And I've been waiting on this to come out. I did it last year, and I've been waiting on it to come out. I don't know what took so long, but I'm excited. I'm hoping people enjoy it. I mean, we'll see. I'm looking forward to seeing what happens.
No, because it's you wrote them, your words, you're saying them. It's the perfect way to consume poetry, really, isn't it?
I suppose it is. Might put you to sleep. You can put it on before you go to bed.
No, well, if it works for the dog, Imelda, because at the moment we have a dog at home, right? This, I'm just telling our listeners that we played him this music last night. It's dog calming music. You can get it on YouTube. There's 15 hours of it. So we had to play it to him last night. So I know we won't be playing your audiobook too. No,
did you fall asleep when the dog stayed?
Well, we were upstairs, but it is. It's very, you could easily fall asleep to that. It works for humans as well as dogs.
That's so funny.
I don't know why it's particularly aimed at dogs. There must be something to do with the frequencies or something that they can. Can they hear things that we don't hear, dogs? I think they can. Yeah, I think they can. You were on that. We spoke to Kathleen Watkins about the collection of Patrick Kavanagh poems. You were on that as well. You did Canal Bank Walk.
Yes.
Nice to be asked.
Really lovely to be asked. Yeah. And I'm a fan of Patrick Kavanagh. Actually, one of my poems called It's Dawning on Me is influenced by him. And it's kind of a prelude, if you like, to Raglan Road. You'll see all the, because Patrick Kavanagh, that's his Raglan Road. So there's all little mentions of it in there. But Patrick Kavanagh is definitely one of my go-tos. I have poetry all over the house constantly.
Do you print it off and frame it, or do you just have books all over the place?
Oh, no, I have books. Books. Just all over the place, yeah.
You're a bric-a-brac lady, and particularly there's poetry books and there's bells. So how many bells have you got?
I love little things that interest me, and I've loads of little bells, and I'm doing this thing. I'm in the middle of setting up a thing for, I'm doing a thing online for Christmas and selling some of me, you know, poetry books and candle. I thought Bell Book and Candle would be good for it, because it's one of my favourite old movies with Kim Novak and James. I just love the show. So I'm doing Bell Book and Candle, and so I'm getting my bells together, and I didn't have enough, so I ordered a load more off different little secondhand shops and a bric-a-brac shop that I know of, and the postman's been delivering them. He's looking at me like a bit 10 heads, because they're all giant every time they come.
That's a good crack, isn't it? Order bells and see how the DHL man reacts, or the postman or whatever. Yeah.
I know.
And who makes the candles for you?
It's one of Noel Gallagher's band members. And he makes, because Noel's a pal of mine, and when everybody was down from lockdown, loads of musicians were trying to figure out what to do. And so this guy, he makes candles, beautiful aromatherapy ones, but he makes them out of wine bottles because he'd so many wine bottles left. So he made my candles. There you are. So that's what I'm putting together.
You think you can just drop David Bowie's name and that I won't ask you about it? See, I left a gap there, but I'm coming back to it. I'm coming back round to David Bowie. So you're on a tour bus with David Bowie. That's something, Imelda, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. We weren't going anywhere. I just done the gig with Jeff Beck in the Iridium, and we were doing the Les Paul Mary Ford tribute.
Right.
And I didn't know that David Bowie was a massive Les Paul and Mary Ford fan. Now, Les Paul, for anyone who doesn't know, he started up the multi-tracking system. So he was the innovator for being able to record layer upon layer upon layer.
And he made guitars as well, did he?
The solid-bodied guitar, yeah. So he was huge and very, like, people look back on things and thinking, oh, that lovely old man from the past. But he was so ahead of his time and what he did. And his contribution, you know, was massive to the music that you're listening to now. You know, and Mary Ford was such an amazing vocalist. She was able to put that to use by layering all these. Anyway, Bowie was a massive fan, so he came to see the show, and he wanted to speak to me afterwards because I was doing the Mary Ford parts, and he was very impressed, and he was wanting to chat to me about everything, life, love, music. Yeah. And we had a good L, and he was very funny, and he was very nice, and we had a good L, and he gave me some good pointers.
Right.
And one of them was to keep making yourself, keep going into deeper waters, keep pushing ahead and keep changing. And so he was a good inspiration to me too. I do keep changing.
Yeah. And every time he comes up on a Spotify playlist, I just get so sad because he was such, and he'd a lot more to give as well, didn't he? I felt
he did a lot more to give. Oh, he'd a huge amount more to give. If he was around, he'd continue to change
and innovate and move out of his comfort zone. Yes.
Yeah. It never stops. So, I've been very lucky.
Yeah.
With the people I've gotten to work with and hang around with, and there's still more to come.
A lot more to come. I'm getting over COVID to this person. This is an odd question for you. I need to sing solo at the weekend. Very minor stuff, but my voice is sore, weak, and croaky. Could you please ask Imelda what does she do for her throat if it's sore and she needs to sing? There you go.
So, first off, cut out caffeine and cut out alcohol as much as you can.
Ah, good tip.
And drink loads of water and steam. You have to steam. And you get a thing called throat coat if you can. Anything with mallow root is really soothing and it soothes your throat. You'll get a throat coat tea if you go into your local herbalist place. And this is a known singer's thing. You get anything with mallow. And that helps you. And I've discovered if you do need a little drink before going on, and this is not a plug or anything, Kinsale Mead, there's an amazing mead company. I came up with this idea.
But you said don't drink the alcohol. Now you're saying drink the alcohol.
Well, I know. Well, yeah, I know. Right. I contradict myself often, right? Right. As we all do.
Yes, we do. Yes, okay.
So I decided, I cut out the alcohol beforehand for ages and ages, but sometimes you need a little something to take the edge off.
Rightio.
Because if you're stressed, that makes your throat muscles contract. Is this too technical for me?
Well, you've given an awful lot of advice there, so she's going to take that alone.
So on the day, take the mead. Kinsale mead is beautiful, and I figured honey is good for you.
Yeah.
A little alcohol to take the edge off.
And Bob's
and then
uncle.
You have, so mead, drink your mead. Take out the alcohol and your caffeine, drink the mead before.
PookaFestival.com. Imelda May is opening. She's headlining on Friday night on the Pooka Big Top Stage at Trim Castle. It goes on for the weekend. It's a bank holiday weekend. And there's everybody there. As I said, you said yourself, Lisa Hannigan, Abba Esk, Blind Boy, Joanne McNally, Neil Delamere, Lisa Hannigan, as I said, Cathy Davey, The High Kings, loads more. And I'll just give the web address one more time, PookaFestival.com. Imelda, great talking to you. Mind yourself.
Really great talking to you. Right.
Good luck with everything.
Hopefully. Yeah, and to you too.
Yeah. See you, Imelda. Bye, 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 bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, back in the depths of lockdown, January 2021, we spoke to Irish writer Suzanne Harrington on the phone. Suzanne had written a really honest essay about drinking again briefly during COVID after nearly 15 years of sobriety. There was a huge reaction to that interview, and we said at the time that we'd have to get Suzanne into a studio for a proper chat about relapse and recovery. So Suzanne Harrington is in the BBC studio in Brighton. Hello, Suzanne.
Hello, Ray.
Good to talk to you again.
You too.
We're people of our word. most of the time. Yeah. So remind us then, firstly, about the relapse. So it was during lockdown, you were in a Marks and Spencer's. What happened?
I was a bit hungry and a bit tired, and I hadn't been to any sort of 12-step meetings for a while, and I just picked up a can of something or other. And that was it.
Just
and
like
then
that.
It happened
just
a few
like that.
More times. Yeah, just random. Just
but
very
you,
quickly.
But, because 14 years is a long time, you know. And it's, I would imagine that you thought about it every day. Did you? I don't know. Do you think about it every day? Do you think I am sober 14 years? I'm not going to have a drink today. Is that the way it works?
No, not at all. It was not for me. I mean, I hadn't been. It hadn't been on my mind at all. And I think it had been building inside in my mind for, you know, subconsciously for quite some time. Obviously, the picking up the drink off the shelf in the Marks and Spencers was kind of the last action of something that had been building up.
And
probably because of lockdown.
Yes, that's what I was going to ask next. That was a contributory factor.
I'd say it was a pretty big factor because I, you know, all of the kind of, for me, it was isolation. Not for me, for every addict or anybody with a kind of propensity to addictive anything. Isolation is not your friend. Mm. And lockdown was, as we all know, the biggest isolation ever.
And all the AA meetings went online.
They did. And instead of getting with the program and going online, I thought, no, I don't really like this. I don't like it. It was like the Muppet Show with all those little windows.
Oh, yeah.
And I just thought, oh, I can't be getting on with this at all. I'll be fine because I've been sober for so long. And I wasn't.
Right.
But the minute lockdown stopped, I kind of got my act together again and have been, you know, sober ever since.
So how long were you drinking then?
Not that long. It was kind of very intermittent, a few times over a space of a few months.
Mm.
It wasn't anything catastrophic. I was saying to your producer that, or your researcher that, you know, I didn't burn the house down. I didn't rob any banks. I didn't do anything horrendous. It was just something out of character at that stage, and how weird it was to go back into that state of, you know, I never wanted to drink again after I gave up.
The first time after you gave up, the first time
the first time.
Yes, yeah.
And I didn't, and I, you know, it was a long time. But I think there was a huge amount of people had a similar experience to me in lockdown.
And were you disappointed with yourself?
Not disappointed. It was more like, a bit alarmed, like, oh, okay, I shouldn't really be doing this. Why am I doing this? This isn't good. And then once life kind of went back to a bit more normal again, I just thought, no, I'm not enjoying this. This is not for me. And because when I first got sober, I was not happy. You know, I was lonely and miserable and isolated and drunk and hungover and just not in a good place years and years ago. But my life these days is marvelous.
Yeah.
And I thought, I don't want to go back to that life. I love my life as it is. I have a great life in terms of, you know, contentment and connection and friendships and that stuff. And so to go back to kind of drinking on my own in secret, I mean, no, I didn't want to do that.
Well, that begs the question then, of course, why were you drinking so much in the first place? And you've outlined some of the reasons there. And during the 14 years of sobriety, you must have thought about, why did I drink so much and why did it affect me the way it affected me? And what did you come up with?
Well, it's funny, you know, I was listening to your thing on Gabor Maté and when you spoke to him last week, and about, you know, his take on it of, you know, that drinking or using drugs or using whatever is a kind of a coping mechanism for underlying things that haven't been addressed. Mm. And I had underlying things that hadn't been addressed. And in sobriety, I addressed them.
Okay.
And the drinking, I mean, you know, you can kind of do lots and lots of therapy, but if you're still pouring loads of booze or drugs or sex or shopping or food or gambling or whatever on top of it, you're not really going to sort yourself out. So I removed the drink and then had another go at sort of looking at the underlying things, and it worked.
Okay.
Really well, until lockdown, when I took my eye off the ball.
Right. So that suggests to me, and this is for you, that addressing that root cause was the treatment for your alcoholism. Is that fair enough?
And avoiding alcohol. Yeah,
and avoiding alcohol. But if you address the root cause, then it's easier to avoid alcoholism, because there isn't that. I heard this expression last week. I was doing a thing and somebody used it, that hole in your soul, that void.
Yeah.
Did you have one of those?
Oh, I think so. Yeah. I mean, always kind of looking for something. It's kind of seeking something and looking in the wrong places for it. You know, it wasn't anything hugely dramatic, as I said. It was just kind of long-term dysfunctional and increasingly miserable relationship with alcohol. Yet because alcohol is so normal in our society, it's harder to kind of pinpoint. You know, if I'd been doing heroin or something, I would be like, this seems to be problematic. But when you're just a bit drunk, quite a lot, it doesn't seem that problematic, because so are a lot of people. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. What do you think about that then? Because we're constantly talking here in this country about our unhealthy relationship with alcohol, but we don't do anything about it. Sorry, I shouldn't laugh, because it's not funny. It's actually quite serious.
No, go on. No, I mean, there. You know, they say now that if alcohol got invented now, it would be banned.
Of course it would. Yeah, it's an addictive poison.
Well, it's just it doesn't lend itself to great thinking, does it? And it kind of reduces us back to our most basic reptilian brain, whereas other substances might maybe enlighten us or open up our thinking. And I guess alcohol is a very handy kind of social control, isn't it?
Go on. That sounds like a conspiracy theory, Suzanne.
No, I don't mean that at all.
No,
but it's just like, it's like, you know, what's that expression? You know, bread and circuses. It's kind of like, I think it keeps us kind of
sedated.
A bit dopey.
Yeah.
Yeah, a bit.
Oh, I don't know. I think it's a lot more mundane than that. I think it's just the power of the alcohol industry. I don't think it's any great forces of control sort of wanting us to be slightly boozed up all the time. I think.
Well,
I don't know.
I suppose it's our traditional drug, isn't it? And you know, we're not great at change.
Yeah.
And also, you know, it's very good for, it's a very instant relaxant.
Mm. And we're
sold
that.
It's very sociable.
Yes.
And it allows us to talk to people more easily. So it has loads going for it. I'm not anti anything. I'm certainly not anti alcohol. But I do wonder about how it's hugely promoted and everything else is prohibited. It's kind of a bit odd.
Well, it's an accident of history, as you say, isn't it? Because if it was presented to us now and we were going to vote on it and we were given the facts, we would definitely vote against it.
I think we would. And I wonder if it won't eventually kind of fade out. And
do you think?
Peak generations coming up.
You've two. What age are your children?
19 and 22.
Right. So what do they say about drink? What's their relationship to drink?
One of them likes to drink socially. The other one isn't that bothered at all.
Yeah.
They kind of have a very healthy, non-committal relationship with it.
Yeah.
They don't want to end up like me. That's what they always say.
But they didn't see. Did they see you when you were at your worst?
No, never. But like they just know that, you know, they know a lot about alcoholism because they grew up with a recovering alcoholic. So they know a lot about it. And, you know, they're not that keen on following my footsteps.
And so you've had very honest chats with them. And of course, they read your stuff. So that's you can't hide it from them, really.
Do you know they don't?
Do they not?
They have no interest. I've written a book. They haven't read it. I've all my newspaper stuff. They haven't read it. They just, I think they might find it vaguely embarrassing. Do you know what I mean? They're not keen at all. Yeah. But they have been around chats of, you know, we've had other recovering, lots of my friends are in recovery. And so they're just around it.
So Alcohol Anonymous worked for you initially?
It did, yeah. It completely worked for me. Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
Mm.
I wouldn't be sitting here without 12-step recovery. I absolutely wouldn't.
And how are you on it now? What's your relationship with AA?
It's changed a bit. Like, since lockdown, I haven't re-embraced it as much. They say in recovery that it's a bridge to normal living. And since my kind of relapse, I realised that actually I won't die. And I feel like I'm crossed that bridge a little bit to normal living, and things feel a lot more balanced. And I still hang around with people in recovery, and my life is still very recovery based. My partner's in recovery, or doesn't drink or use anything, but I'm not as on it as I used to be.
And you know, part of the AA thing, isn't it, that you have a mentor, that somebody who's at the end of the phone that you can ring if you're having a rough day?
Yes.
And do you still have that person?
I don't have a specific one, no, but I've got a group of close girlfriends that, you know, could ring any time of the day or night, but not a specific mentor not an official way. No,
yeah.
Not that it's official, but it's kind of baked in, you know, it's like a stick of rock. If you cut me in half, it would be, you know, that kind of thing would be baked in at this stage.
Yeah. You've read a lot of the sort of quitlet thing. There's like definitely double figures of books written by women of a certain age who've given up alcohol and are writing about it.
So there's
a movement, isn't there? A sort of a soberista movement.
I think there is. There's one book that really jumped out at me. It's called Quit Like a Woman, and I can't remember the author, but she wrote, it's just such a great alternative to, she tried 12-step recovery, and she found it wasn't quite for her because she found it a bit patriarchal and a bit gaudy and all the things that, you know, worked beautifully for privileged white men in 1935. But may not be entirely. I mean, the bones of it are the same, and the bones of it, if you know, for anybody's first call who has a problem with booze and needs to stop, I would say immediately drop everything and go to a meeting. However, this woman examines it a little further and looks at ways of being sober without having to. Her point, without having to do full on. Alcoholics Anonymous. Her thing is that the steps or the program is kind of designed to deflate and annihilate the ego, and humble oneself and admit one's wrongs. And she kind of said that's not really appropriate for a lot of women because we're already in that position anyway because of the patriarchy, you know what I mean.
Okay, yes, I do. Yes, yes. And of course, the fact that it was designed by two white men of a certain age back in the 1930s, you know, it may not fit 2022 for everybody.
It may not.
Because you've read Gábor Maté's book and you've read an awful lot on this. So where are you at with even the label alcoholic? How are you with that?
Again, I think it's starting to... I mean, they don't use it anymore in the medical profession. It's become quite an old-fashioned thing to say. So it's... I mean, when in 12-step recovery, the first thing you say is, my name is Suzanne and I'm an alcoholic, at the start of every interaction. It's to remind yourself of what you are. But... And again, it's to stop people from kind of squirming out of it in denial, because as we all know, there is nothing like addiction for denial. But I think alcohol misuse is probably, or alcohol misuse disorder is, it's a bit of a mouthful, but it seems to be replacing the word alcoholic. I mean, I don't know. It doesn't really matter. The fact is, you have a problem with it. It doesn't really matter what you call it, does it? The crux is that you sort it out.
Yeah, I suppose some people say that the alcoholic thing gives a sort of the world a black and white hue, in that you're either an alcoholic or you're not. If you're not an alcoholic, you don't have a problem, which is probably not the case.
Yeah. No, exactly. I think that it is very black and white. Whereas I do believe that abstinence is kind of the only thing that works. I mean, Adrian Childs, the football pundit, just did a book about, I can't remember what it's called now, but it's about controlled drinking, stopping after one drink or stopping after two drinks, which is great if you're a heavy drinker or you've just maybe been drinking too much. But I would say that a lot of people with a drink problem, if we have one or two drinks, we just kind of want more. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas normal drinkers will put the wine back in the fridge. We can't do that. We just kind of look at them mystified. How do they, you know, how do you do that?
But it's interesting because, as you alluded to earlier on, like, things are changing and the attitudes are changing. And I wonder, are people and alcoholics told that they will behave a certain way? And there's sort of fear built into the whole thing, that fear of having one drink and then not being able to stop.
Yeah, I don't think that. I think because it's a progressive and gradual and kind of insidious thing. You mean, of course, you can have one drink and you're not going to go on a rampage.
Yeah.
That happens. You know, not everybody is going to go on a rampage. Some people will, but not everybody. It can be a slow build up. And there may never be a rampage. It can just be a quiet sense of kind of being eaten away at yourself on the inside, of not being connected to yourself or not being connected to other people properly, because you're kind of numbing yourself out. And that's the crux of it. What are you numbing yourself out against? And that's what, it's like what Gábor Maté said, what's underneath? What do you need? Why are you pouring alcohol on top, or drugs or whatever, or food on top of? What is it that you're pushing down? And why not shine a light on that instead? Not to sound like a new age, you know, madwoman, but that, like,
that's a good place
to
end.
Instead.
Yeah. Suzanne Harrington, thanks so much for coming into the Brighton studio and talking to us on that. And mind yourself. Good talking to you.
It's a pleasure.
Thanks, Suzanne.
Ray.
Bye.
Thank
now.
You.
Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Gura Margaret Marion, thank you very much. And great to hear Suzanne on the radio. She wrote a brilliant piece on the death of her dad in The Examiner. It was very moving. Spoken in a very honest way. Condolences to her, says Theresa in Cork. And Frank says, why would I vote against enjoying 4 to 5 pints a week in my local, enjoying the crack with my mates? That's Frank's question. Now, let's get to our quiz. We have two quizzers standing by. And we have a prize as well. And it is, if I can find it, I've lost it now. I'll tell you about the prize at the end. Rebecca, how are you doing, Rebecca?
Hi, Ray.
I lost the prize details there. I know it's out the road there in Maynooth, but I'll tell you more about that. There it is there. I'll tell you about it now. Carton House, that's where you'll be going if you win today, Rebecca. It's set on 1,000 acres of sweeping parkland, ancient woodlands, lakes and the meandering River Rye. It's a lovely place out there, and you get 2 nights stay, breakfast in the house and dinner on one of the evenings in Kathleen's kitchen. And it's just 25 minutes from Dublin. So there you go, Rebecca. That's if you win today. Now, you're in Palmerstown, so you wouldn't have to go far.
Well, we don't have to go far.
No. Whereabouts, you're not from Palmerstown originally?
No, originally I'm from Monaghan.
Right. Go on.
Actually went to college in Maynooth and then never went home.
Aha, right. Did you meet a dub? Or?
I did. Right. He's from Ballyfermot originally.
Aha. Now, people are going to go a bit mad at you today, Rebecca, because you've done some what?
Christmas shopping.
Yeah.
I'm off this week. So
right.
I'll make use of it.
So you're getting ahead of yourself and everybody else. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And how was that experience for you? Because Halloween hasn't happened yet, you may have noticed.
Yes.
Yes. And are you always an early Christmas shopping person?
Yeah, because I have to do my shopping, Stephen's shopping and my mum's shopping.
Right, so you have three lots to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So how much did you get done?
Not a lot, to be honest.
Right.
Spent a lot of money.
There are advantages, though, because you have more choice.
Yes, and it was lovely. There was no big crowds.
Yeah.
It was lovely today.
Yeah, no queues, all of that stuff that happens.
Great.
But then there are certain people who love that part of it. They love, you know, the busyness and the queues and all that. I don't know why, but some people do. Yeah,
not for me.
Yeah. You work for PayPal?
I do.
Didn't Elon Musk, is he the original? He was there at the start,
was he?
He was
one of them.
Yes.
Yeah, he was one of the founders, yeah. Yeah.
What did we do before PayPal?
I know. They've revolutionized us.
Yeah.
It's
amazing. It's amazing.
I know. It's a good company.
Yeah, and so trustworthy. Are they good to work for? You're not going to say...
Really?
Yeah.
No, they're really good. In fairness, they're a really good company.
And how long have you been working for them?
4.5 years.
Right.
Yeah. Really,
and did you work from home? Can you work from home? Do you work from home?
I do work from home. So I went on maternity leave in January 2020.
Yeah.
And never went back to the office then.
Right.
I go in every so often.
So 2020, so you have a 2 and 9 month, you're a 2.5 year old, yeah?
Yeah.
Boy or a girl?
A little girl called Ada.
Ada, lovely. And how is she?
She is perfect.
Right. And you're going back home to Monaghan this weekend?
We are. We're going to a Halloween party in my cousin's house.
Nice. Are you dressing up?
Yeah, we're both going as witches.
You and your partner. Lovely.
Yeah.
So you have the whole lot, have you? The hat and all the broomstick and all that.
Yeah, well, Ada has a broomstick. I don't have one yet.
Right. And you have to get a wart for your nose as well. I don't know how you do that, but I'm sure.
I know.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. You're up against Anne Fallon, who's in Athlone in Roscommon. How are you doing, Anne?
Hello, how are you, Ray?
Good. You've just finished work.
Can you hear me okay, Ray?
Yes, you're coming in loudly and clearly, Anne. Can you hear me?
Perfect.
Yes, great.
So thanks to Dave, your sound man.
Yeah.
I want to give him a mention.
Yeah, fine. He's out there, a big smile on his face. That's the first time he smiled all day, Anne. So thank you for that.
Well, that's good.
Isn't it good? Yeah. You put a smile
nice
on Dave's face.
It's nice to make somebody smile.
It is.
Yeah.
So you're just in from work.
Just in from work.
And you have three children. What ages are they?
25, 27 and 29.
And how many are still at home?
None. Oh, I have a baby who's 3 in November.
You have a which?
A little baby.
Oh, you're going to be a grandmother?
No, I have a little dog, Ray.
Oh, you have a little dog? Sorry.
She'd be 3 in November. She's my baby.
Oh, she's your baby. Coco the dog, yes.
Yeah.
Is Coco there with you?
She is, yeah. She's my helper. She's relaxing here now before her walk.
Okay, we'll help her relax a little bit more. Here we go. Where are you going? Hold on. That's dog calming music, Anne.
Yeah, she likes dog TV. I put it on
Does she?
And Paw Patrol.
Paw Patrol. Of course, she loves Paw Patrol and Lassie. Yeah, Beethoven. All the dog ones. Yeah, yeah. So you have a bucket list, I believe. How many things are on the bucket list?
I keep adding to it, but I have a lot of things achieved from it. Some things are personal, so I won't be discussing them
fine.
On the air. But
yeah.
Before the lockdown, I always wanted to take part in a panto, and I did in December 2019, I think it was. I was in my local panto, and I played the Mad Hatter.
Ah, oh no, you didn't.
Oh yes, I did. So that was fun, the rehearsals, yes, and the balls on stage. It was lovely.
Your friend Dave with the smile on his face is asking, could you please move the phone just slightly away from your face because you're popping?
Okay.
See, now you've developed a relationship. He says thank you very much and he's still smiling. There you
thank
go.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you, Dave. Much better now. Yeah, much better now. There you go. So we met in Ukraine, did we, at the Eurovision?
We did. We met in Athlone years ago when my daughter, you were making an appearance in Supermax Ray, and I
glamour.
Came for a few hours with her. She wanted to meet you, and we had a lovely photograph, but I don't know where it is now. She was about 6 or 7, so that's a long time ago.
And there was a 6-foot-tall pink bunny in it as well, I think.
Yeah, and you sat on one of the big chairs.
Okay.
So you're popular in Athlone as well.
Popular in Athlone, yeah. Mm. So, and Ukraine then. Were you at the Eurovision in Ukraine?
I was, because Donna and Joe McCall from Athlone were representing Ireland, and I went to support them.
Yes, Love was the name of the song, wasn't it?
Very talented. Pardon?
Love was the name of the song.
Love, yes.
Yeah, yes, yeah.
Do you want to sing a few bars, Ray?
You're okay, Anne. We had the quiz to do, but thank you.
Sorry, I'm doing your job, Ray.
Yes,
sorry.
Yeah, right, okay. We better move on before you ask me to dance or something, right? Okay, it's Anne Fallon in Athlone. We have a history. And Rebecca in Palmerstown. Three questions each. If you go for a long clip, you get a point. Go for a shorter clip, you get 2 points. Whoever's the most points wins. And if the drawing points, we go to a tie-break question. Good luck to you both. Here we go.
Best of luck, Dan. Best of luck to yourself.
Now, Rebecca.
Okay. Sorry, Rebecca. I couldn't think your name. Yeah. You're fine.
Rebecca, to you first. The year is 1984. Mm-hmm. 1984, okay. And we're starting at the movies. So do you want a long clip or a short clip?
Oh, I'll go short. Please,
okay.
Ray.
1984 saw the first installment of a series of films about a time-travelling killer robot. Can you name it? Here's your short clip.
I'm a friend of Sarah Connor. I was told that she's here. Could I see her, please?
No, can't see her. She's making a statement.
I think it's Terminator.
It is Terminator. Yes, Arnold Schwarzenegger. You get 2 points. Well done. Now, Anne.
Yes,
movies
right.
from 1984. Long clip or short clip?
It's a pity it's not 1994, Ray. You couldn't change it.
No,
could you?
Can't change it.
I'll be brave. I'll try a short clip.
Okay. In this movie from 1984, a rebellious young man seeks to free a town that has been banned from dancing. Can you name the film? Here's the clip.
From the oldest of times, people danced for a number of reasons. They danced in prayer, or so that their crops would be plentiful.
And it is.
1984. Was that Kevin Bacon?
It was.
I can sing the song. Footloose.
Yes, well done. Footloose, 2 points. Yes. Okay, well done. Good start from both of you. Back to you, Rebecca. Second question's on music from 1984. What do you want to do, long or short?
I think I'll go short again.
Short again. This song was a huge hit in 1984. Can you name the song or the singer?
I'm never gonna dance again.
George Michael?
Yes, George Michael, Careless Whisper. Well done, 2 points. And to you, Anne, music from 1984. Long or short?
Short.
Short. Another huge hit from 1984. Can you name the song or the singer?
Madonna?
Yes.
Like a Virgin?
Yes, right, well done. Okay, down to the wire then. To you, Rebecca, it's news and current affairs from 1984. What do you want to do?
Short again, please.
Short again, okay. This famous Irish musician organised a collaboration of musicians to raise money for charity. Can you tell us who he is?
And that's what everybody here is doing. So we're giving something of ourselves, I suppose, is the best thing.
Who's that?
Bob Geldof.
It is. He organised Do They Know It's Christmas and then Live Aid the year after in 1985. Well done. Clean sheet, 6 out of 6. And puts you under pressure. If you get this right, it takes us to a tie-break question. That's if you go for a short clip. Are you going for a short clip?
Yes,
you sort of have to.
Sure, I've nothing to lose.
No, you don't, you're right, yes, yeah. In 1984, this man came to Ireland on a 4-day official visit. Can you name him? Here's your short clip, listen carefully.
Here in your country, those chords have been gently and movingly struck.
Who's that?
Was he the President of the United States?
He was.
He was an actor?
He was.
I can see him.
Yeah.
There's an airport named after him.
Is there?
In Reagan Airport. Reagan.
Yes, yes, yeah.
Ronald Reagan.
Yes, it took you a while, but you got around to it in the end. You're right, yes.
Yeah. Well done. You see, Ray, when you get to my age, your brain is like a hard drive and you have to dig deep to pull out the information.
Yes, you have to put a couple of words into the search engine. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, well, you did so successfully. So it's a draw at the end on points. Well done. Both of you got 6. That's really good. On a normal day, 6 would win it for you, but today you're up against good competition. So we're down to a tie-break question. We asked you this question before you went on air. Whoever gets closest to the correct answer is today's winner. I'll repeat the question now for our listeners at home. According to Google Maps, how long would it take to walk from Cove in County Cork to Ross's Point in County Sligo? So, Rebecca, your guess.
I really hoped it wouldn't come to this because my answer is stupid. But I had said 16 hours, 45 minutes.
16 hours, 45 minutes. It's 325 kilometres, just for your information. And Anne, your guess was?
Well, I'm like Rebecca. I hadn't a clue, Ray, and I just took a wild guess. It's probably way out, but I said 19 hours, 45 minutes.
Right, 19 hours, 45 minutes. Okay. Well, both of you are way out, but it's we were looking for the person who's closest. So the correct answer is 66 hours. So, Anne, that means you're the closest, way off, but the closest. So, commiserations, Rebecca. Sorry about that.
No,
we're going to send you.
Could
out a couple
you not have a nice prize for Rebecca as well?
No,
Rick,
Anne.
We're
no.
Such good
no.
Contestants.
Yeah, well, there is. We're sending out a couple of Ray Darcy Show mugs, and she can use them as Christmas presents if she likes. Whatever you're. Okay, lovely talking to you, Rebecca. See you.
Thanks,
bye,
Ray.
Bye. Anne Fallon, that loan. Well done. Congratulations. You can now go to cartonestate.com and have a look at what's in store for you down in Carton House.
Oh, thanks so much, Ray, and thanks very much to Emily and Dave for being so nice to me.
See you.
Really appreciate
it. Good luck. See you. Bye. Bye.
Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah, cartonhouse.com. Cartonhouse.com if you want more information on Carton House. Now, author, Jeff Kinney has sold 275 million copies of his Diary of a Wimpy Kid books. Imagine that, 275 million. They've been translated into 82 languages. They've spawned movie versions, including an upcoming animation and even a musical. The 17th instalment, Diaper Overload, comes out today. And there's exciting news for all you Heffley fans out there. Loaded Diaper are on tour and they're coming to Ireland next month for a special rock and roll event. And Jeff will be there as well. And Jeff is on the line. Hello, Jeff Kinney.
Hey, it's nice to talk to you again, Ray.
Yeah, I went to our local bookshop and here it is in my hand, Diary of a Wimpy Kid, Diaper Overload. The hilarious brand new Wimpy Kid book. What number is it?
It's number 17. And I have to admit, when I hear you say diaper overload, I'm a little embarrassed to be a grown man.
Well, of course,
that book.
It doesn't hit as hard here because we call them nappies.
So, okay, there we go.
Yeah, so it's sort of softened a little bit. And of course, the name comes from Roderick, who is Greg's older brother's band, doesn't it?
That's right. He's got a band called Loaded Diaper. And this is just getting more and more embarrassing for me by the moment.
You love it, Jeff Kinney, because you are the envy of all us adults because you still play. You still play in a big way and live in a child's mind. It's brilliant.
You know that it's really funny that you say that, actually, because, you know, this year I'm going out on tour with a rock band. And, you know, we've got a giant 10-foot inflatable baby on the stage. We're playing rock music. We've got fog machines. And I'm like, man, I could have I could have dreamed this up when I was like 15 years old, and now at 51, like I can actually make it happen.
You're it's making great. It happen. Listen, the best questions for you, Jeff Kinney, don't come from me. They come from your fans. And yes. we said you were coming on, so we've loads of voice notes and we have some live callers as well. So will we get going on that?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, well, let's go to Josh first then. Here, Josh, hello.
Hi, Jeff. My name is Josh. I'm 9 years old and I'm from Dublin. I've read all your books and loved them all. What gave you the idea to write your new book, Diaper Overload? I can't wait to read it. Thank you so much and keep writing.
There you go. Come on, Josh.
Wow. I'd like a kid like that.
Yeah, he's confident. Yeah.
Yeah. Tell me about it. What gives me an inspiration? It's meeting that next generation of fans. I've been really lucky to do this for 15 years. And the kids who read my original books have grown up and they've grown into their careers. And there are still new kids coming along. And so I want to entertain them and tell stories. Some of the stories are from my own life. So I try to entertain with these books. Great
okay.
question.
Okay, thanks, Josh. Emily?
Hi, Jeff. My name is Emily. I was wondering when Greg Heffley will leave middle school. Thank you.
I think, Greg Heffley is my bread and butter, so he can never leave middle school.
There you go. There's the answer, yes. Sarah Healy is on the line. How are you doing, Sarah?
Hi.
Yeah, say hello to Jeff.
Hello.
What age are you, Sarah?
I'm 10.
10, right. How many of the Diary of a Wimpy Kid books have you read, do you think?
All of them.
All of them, right. Okay, wow. So you must be really looking forward to Diaper Overload. What do you want to say to Jeff?
Wow, you're such an amazing author, and I read all your books and enjoyed every one of them thoroughly. They're so good.
That's it.
Well, that's cool.
That's brilliant. Do you want to say?
There's no question, but I love it.
There's no question. It's just a comment, and it's a lovely comment. Yeah. So, Marianne is your sister. Does she read Jeff's books as well, Sarah?
Well, yes and no. She has this thing called a Tony, and she listens to audios of them,
yes.
But she still enjoys them.
Oh, brilliant, brilliant. Who do you want to say hello to now that you're on, Sarah?
My cousins, Fiona, Enya and Una, my lovely granny and granda, and my daddy.
Okay, we're going to send you out a copy of the new book, and you're invited to come along and see Jeff and the band on Monday, the 14th of November, in the RDS in Dublin. That's great.
No way.
Yeah, way.
No way.
Yeah. Sarah, I love you. That's Sarah Healy from Cavan and Bell Turbot. Now, let's go back to some of our voice notes. Here we go. We've Lennon. How are you, Lennon?
Hi, my name is Lennon. I'm 8 years old and from Six Mile Bridge. So I have two questions for Jeff Kinney. Is the character Manny based off of his own child? And how many more Diary of a Wimpy Kid books do you plan on making?
There you go. Two good questions.
Great questions. Manny is based on my younger brother, Patrick, who used to do dastardly things and never got in trouble for them. And I plan on getting to at least book 20, and then we'll see. If people are still reading my books, maybe I'll keep going. So great question.
Yeah. Tom?
Hello, my name is Tom. I love Diary of a Wimpy Kid, and I love reading your books, Jeff Kinney. My question is Greg based on your childhood, like his parents and his best friend, Rowley? Thank you. I love the books. Bye.
That's a great question. And, the characters really are based on me and my family. In a way, they're sort of twisted and put in the fiction blender, I guess you could say. And my best friend, Ryan, was the original basis for Rowley. Uh-huh. And we just reconnected about 2 weeks ago after about 35 years. So pretty cool.
Do you owe money, Jeff, for the inspiration?
Yeah, I was a little bit worried about why he showed up at my doorstep.
Copyright with a copyright lawyer. Ruben.
Hi, my name is Ruben. Great. I am 7. I really like Diary of a Wimpy Kid. What were your favorite books when you were 7?
Oh, that's a great question, Ruben.
Oh, boy. There was an American author named Judy Blume who wrote books.
Oh, yeah.
Called Tales of a Fourth Grade Nothing and Freckle Juice. And she wrote books where I could see myself. And I think it's really important that you have books where you can see yourself. I think it's really important for everybody to be able to read about characters who look and act like them.
Thanks, Reuben. Dunica is on the line. How are you doing, Dunica?
Good.
Good. Where are you from?
I'm from Kerry, near Castle Island.
What age are you?
I'm 8 3/4.
3/4, very important. And how many of Jeff's books have you read, do you think?
I've read all the way up to Deep End.
Right, okay. Do you want to say hello to Jeff?
Yeah.
Go on.
Hi, Jeff.
There's Donica. Donica, Jeff.
Very cool. So he read all the way up to the Deep End, but he didn't read Big Shot. So I think we got him all the way up.
Yeah. To book, what's your question for Jeff, Donica?
What would you do if you were Jeff?
So we're breaking up there. We'll try and get Donica on a better line there because we've lost him there. So I tell you what, we've another one. Yeah, we'll try and get Donica back up on the line. Let's go to Sam. Hello, Sam.
Hello. My name is Sam and I'm from St. Johnstone, County Donegal. I've been buying your book for the past 5 years on its release date, and my question is, how do you get inspiration to write a story every single year?
That's a good question from Sam.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Great question. You know, every single year I worry that I'll never come up with another funny idea. And right now I'm on tour and this is the time when I come up with that next book idea. So I'm really hoping that there's a spark sometime during this tour.
Yeah, well, you're meeting so many people and traveling to so many different places that there's going to be something, isn't there?
There's got to be something, yes.
Yeah. Dunica, have we got you back on a better line? Hello?
Yeah.
Yeah, you have about 10 seconds now. What's your question for Jeff?
My question for Jeff is, if you were Greg, what would you do to Roderick to get him back for shooting you in the butt with a paintball gun?
That's a good question.
You know, it's a dangerous game to get into a war with your older sibling. So I think Greg should just like lay down and, you know, accept his fate.
Have you got an older brother, Dunica?
No.
No. Okay. Have you got brothers? You do?
Yeah, 2 younger brothers.
And a sister, I see. Sean O'Gruan and Nora. You better say hello to them. You're the eldest.
Eleonora.
Yes. And Nora. Yeah. We're going to send you out the book, Dunica, and you're invited along to the RDS on November the 14th to see Jeff and the band live on stage.
Thanks. And that's only 10 days after my birthday.
Oh, well, there you go. Look, that's what a way to celebrate your birthday. Thanks, Dunica. Slán. Jeff Kinney, we'll see you when you're here, sure.
All right.
Good luck with the tour in America. And it's November 14th, live in the RDS. And Diaper Overload is in shops now. Thanks, Jeff. See you. Bye.
Thank you so much.
I love that. That was so sweet. Cormac's on Drive Time. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.